Hello and welcome to the Scottish Football Show. Heartbreak for Nielsen as Robbie's reign ends. Big up the Beanos as Stirling Albion are about to win the league. And scrappy challenge as the relegation race hots up. My friends, I am Andrew Slavin, your guide in this unholy quest that is Scottish football. And joining me is the most unholiest of all. It's super senior producer, West Ham's Laura Brannan.
Are you telling me that you've watched me just eat chocolate all weekend instead of go to church and celebrate Jesus? Because if you are saying that, you're absolutely correct. I am all chocolated out.
And it's not chocolate buttons he's smashing now. It's Finlay Marks. Hello, Finn.
Hello, how you doing?
I am coming to you live from Madrid, where my head is made of chocolate right now. So, hello. Laura and Finn, tell me what funny things you have seen this weekend.
It was a bit of a mad weekend in Scottish football, but just looking south of the border for a wee second, Laura, are you okay? Because our national captain, your hero, Andy Robertson, was viciously attacked at the weekend.
It was a cold-blooded assault.
Do we have any news on if he's left hospital yet or what's happened?
It's fine. He's in my care. I'm looking after him. He's safe.
It's like an episode of Misery where Andy Robertson wakes up in Laura's flat and is chained to the bed and doesn't know why. And Laura's looking after him just until the next international break. I really hope people have seen the film Misery.
So did anyone actually see this? It was in Liverpool's 2-2 draw at Arsenal on Sunday. The assistant ref elbowed him. And I don't really know why. Does anyone really know why? Yeah, but he's since been suspended pending an investigation. Okay, suspended, like, it just means as in he's not going to get any games right now until there's been an investigation conducted. It's all a bit strange because Robertson also got booked in the aftermath, which seems a bit harpish.
Crazy. Konstantin Hatzidakis, or more like Hacksidakis. do you like that?
Beautiful. As you know, as the cliche goes, the linesman's given the FA a decision to make here by going in with his elbow. So we'll wait and see what happens. My favourite thing about the aftermath of it, though, was, did you see Roy Keane's reaction on Sky Sports to it? As a Roy Keane, traditionally, obviously, is a man who pines for the more rustic days of football when men were men and when boys were also men. And he basically was having a go at Robbo, calling him a massive baby, which is one thing. But I have to give kudos to Keane for the way that he delivered the insult, because his comedic timing, the way that he delivers the word baby for a third time in about 20 seconds, is absolutely astonishing.
What's he going over to him for? And what's he complaining for? I said at half time, Robertson, what a baby. What a big baby. Just get on with the game. Baby.
That's so good. Should we stick with the international theme and talk about Scott McTominay, the absolute goal machine? It's 5 goals in 5 games, Laura. We're going to rule the world.
He is. He's just taken over. Build him a statue in Southampton. He's just the best.
Calm down.
Yeah, no. Still waiting on David Marshall's statue of his hand, so get in line.
Not the best thing to happen to Scott McTominay this weekend, though.
He met Elton John.
I feel like this section of the show is basically Laura bringing up which Scottish international footballers meet celebrity icons from around the world each week. You're absolutely buzzing for a bit of, like, there was John McGinn meeting Tom Hanks a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. And I love seeing my heroes meet their heroes. I don't know if it's just maybe because I work with footballers and I don't get starstruck very easily, but yeah. I like seeing them being starstruck because I see too many egos day to day, and it's nice to just see a little bit of humanity and groundedness.
Some interesting news from Motherwell, Laura, this week. Looking like Mark McGee is heading to Motherwell, but not the Mark McGee that a lot of people got their knickers in a twist about.
The Sun were reporting it, and they reported it as the Mark McGee. The Mark McGee we all know, as in the former Motherwell manager.
I genuinely couldn't believe this was a real story when you posted about it on our WhatsApp chat, Laura. Because it's like rare that it happens that in footballing worlds there will be people with the same name, but it does happen. You'd just think for a role as important as the CEO of one of the top flight clubs in the country, people would at least check to see if it was Mark McGee, the former Celtic and Aberdeen player, and most recently the very unsuccessful Dundee manager who was threatening to get naked in all sorts. Just check if it's him. Maybe somebody in the office has got his number. Just ping him a call or a text and be like, are you just about to step into the role at Motherwell? Because it would have been a massive shock to everybody, least of all Mark McGee.
Yeah, true. Look, this is still hasn't been confirmed, actually. So the new Mark McGee.
The new Mark McGee.
He was seen at Firth Park on Saturday. All arrows are pointing towards him taking on the new job. If anyone doesn't realise, he's the head of finance at Blackpool. He's a businessman. He's not maybe quite a football man. I just think when the club has been so progressive over the last few years with one of the most forward-thinking CEOs in Scotland, in Alan Burrows, kind of feels like it's a step back to just choose somebody who's just going to balance the books. I don't know. I'd love to know his thoughts on some football matters. Let's get him on the show and ask him what his thoughts are on safe pyro.
It's a tough act to follow, no matter who it was that was coming in, quite frankly. So if it's somebody that's going to be good for the club off the pitch, I think that's one of the most important roles of the CEO at any club. And if he can continue to build on the great work that Alan Burrows was doing at Motherwell before, all power to him.
There was a big fallout after the Celtic Rangers game. Some saying on Twitter that Alan McGregor squirted a ball boy with his Lucozade bottle because he was taking too long to give the ball back. Did you see this one?
I took a couple of watches before I was convinced that he actually did it or not. Finn, do you think he did it?
Honestly, I don't care. It's just it's such a stupid thing. Like, when I was reading in the script, there was a bit of fallout from the Old Firm game. I was like, oh, great, yeah, we'll get to talk about that. And then reading it's Alan McGregor might have squirted a dash of Lucozade in a ball boy's face. I was like, come on, man. It's just the way that he's doing it, because he's trying to drink Lucozade at the same time and grab the ball, but because he's trying to then grab the ball, wrestle it out of the ball boy's hands, the pressure of it kind of squeezes a bit of liquid. But it's not aimed at him. It doesn't go on. I'm just like, come on, man.
See, even on that, the ball boys are like told to keep the ball, aren't they? The real scandal of the weekend was the ball boys at Celtic Park celebrating with the players.
There's nothing wrong with that.
I'm sorry, what's wrong with that? That's not okay. They're not
players. It's not okay for the fans to celebrate with the players. Why is it okay for the ball boys? Ball boys are there to do a job and they're not players, but they were acting as though they were part of the squad. They're running from behind the goal over to the corner flag to join in. They don't even know your name, mate. Sit down. Behave.
That's yous all tell now, boys, all right? Ms. Brannan has spoken. To be honest, I've not got a huge issue with it at all. Because at the end of the day, technically, they're employees of the club. It's all the same team, so I don't have a huge issue with it. And just what you were saying about the ball boys, you know, not giving the ball back, it's part of the game. It's part of the tactic. We were talking about it a few weeks ago when Ridvan Yilmaz was trying to get the ball from under that TV gantry against Motherwell and at Firth Park. And it's like, that's part of the game. Consciously, they're told to slow down the game because they don't want, in that instance, Motherwell versus Rangers, Motherwell don't want Rangers to have fluency and momentum. They want to break the game up as much as possible because that, they feel, goes in their favour. At Celtic Park, it was exactly the same. If the possession was in Celtic's favour, so if it was a throw-in or a goal kick or whatever, the ball boys were lightning quick because they'd been instructed to do that. If it was Rangers, they were told to not hold on to it necessarily, but just not be as quick in getting the ball back. I don't have a problem with that. It's as much part of a tactic and trying to give your team any kind of marginal gain as like overwatering the pitch or underwatering it or narrowing the pitch lines or whatever. It's like, you've got to do what you've got to do to try and win a game.
Or take a dump in the opposition's dressing room. Just make that place feel as terrible as you possibly can. The game's based on emotion and it should all be positive emotion. And if that overfloods onto, you know, ball boys enjoying that, they're just as much as part of the team, like you say, Finn, as the rest.
They're not part of the team at all. They look like a skill bear.
Aye, they are. Aye, they are. The team.
They are not part of the team.
I have spoken. look, there's been plenty of fallout over the weekend. We're going to talk more on the Celtic Rangers game later on, but we will start the real nitty gritty with Hearts and their big decision over the weekend.
Shaughnessy lofts it in.
Bounces dangerously. O'Hara's there! St Mirren have a second. Hearts are in disarray in Tynecastle as the boos rain down from the home stands. Some Hearts fans have seen enough. It's all going wrong for Robbie Neilson today.
Tensions have been rising for a few weeks now at Hearts, but Saturday's 2-0 defeat at home to St Mirren proved to be the final nail for Robbie Neilson's reign at Hearts. He was dismissed along with his assistant Lee McCulloch, leaving Stephen Naismith to take interim charge until the end of the season. And his first game is the Edinburgh Derby, Finn. What an opener he's got.
No pressure, Stevie. Just a nice quiet one to ease you into management life. I mean, so we kind of talked about this a little bit last week on the show, and the three of us not being Hearts fans, objectively, were coming at it where we couldn't understand really how visceral the backlash against Robbie Neilson had been in recent weeks. Trying to look at things from a Hearts fan's point of view as much as we can, and trying to understand, I still find it a really odd decision, especially the timing of it. You know, there's seven games left of the season. I don't know if it necessarily gives them the time to rectify things in terms of form in a way that they can still fight and secure a third spot, which I guess is ultimately what's driven this decision. I think from a Hearts fan's point of view, results are kind of catching up with performances now.
Is he the first got 6 defeats in 7 games? Oh, it's not that bad because they're sitting fourth in the table. You've got a European spot, but the fans weren't happy with the style of football. Fans aren't happy with what he's doing to the club. It kind of feels like it's ran its course now. So I kind of feel like on paper to the outside, it doesn't look that bad. But when you're going through that as a Hearts fan, you've got to kind of understand that it's so frustrating. And I kind of alluded to it last week where I said Hearts should be third minimum. The minimum they should be aiming for in the season is third place. They should be challenging higher than that. And maybe not actually finishing maybe first or second, but at least providing their challenge over the course of a season. Right now they're not. And with the players that Hearts have got and the stature of the club and the money behind them, there really is no real reason. And the fact that Robbie Neilson's not been managing to kind of turn around and it's just kind of going more and more downhill, it's a case of they're cutting their losses now and they're seeing it as a chance to spike that new life into that squad. And we've seen it with the likes of Stuart Kettlewell at Motherwell, Barry Robson at Aberdeen. You don't need to change squads to turn your bad fortunes around and go on a run. It can be just a change of mentality sometimes and change of tactics or approach. And that's the direction they've decided to go on to try and... isn't maybe a strong term to use, but to save their season. And I kind of understand where they're coming from on it.
Well, let's just be blunt with it. They've pressed the panic button 100%. They've totally freaked out at the drastic drop in results. Hearts fans don't, we've said it, Hearts fans obviously, or the majority, don't like the style of football. The other blunt fact is, Neilson's boring. I don't think Hearts fans enjoy listening to what he has to say about the performances. And I also think that it's all a load of rubbish. You don't know how good you've got it.
There is an element.
Every season, Robbie Neilson's had a full campaign at the top flight. They've finished third. They could still finish third, but the team in charge at Hearts have pressed the panic button to save their season. But the chief executive, Andrew McKinley, even said, you know, they're bitterly disappointed with the outcome of Saturday's game. They'd obviously given Robbie that one game if he'd lost it. He must have known he was going. Post-match interview said to me he wasn't so sure. He came out saying the players have got to pull their finger out. But those players should have pulled their finger out weeks ago. And I'm sorry, but like Hearts fans can say good riddance. But if you finish outside the top 6 next season, take it on the chin. You're better than that. Hearts should be finishing third. And if Hearts don't finish third, there should be questions on the manager. But we're not at the end of the season. And I just think it's foolish, if not crazy, to do this with only a handful of games left. But maybe I'm being a little bit too defensive.
No, I mean, there is that element of it's a gamble. They're in a European spot right now. The run was going to end at some point. there was going to be a result at some point. You kind of run the risk now of you've put somebody new in. Stephen A. Smith hasn't managed before. It feels like the club have kind of crumbled to the pressure the fans are putting them under right now because they've been very loud. But you're kind of seeing there, but he's boring and maybe his football's boring. Is that, if it gets you results, and I know right now it's not getting them results because they're going through a bad patch, but in the long run, boring football doesn't necessarily mean you're a bad manager.
And here's the other reality. Other managers looking at Hearts are going to look like, well, if I lose four games in a row, am I going to get the chop? You know, like, where's the sustainability with this club if they're going to turn round to an ex-player who's had about 200 appearances for the club, someone that the club themselves have said is an absolute, or at least the hierarchy, says that Nielsen's Hearts through and through, but they're still going to give him the chop because of fan pressure and of losing four games in a row, but you're still in the fight for third place. I mean, it's infuriating because I kind of know how good Hearts can be and the amount of players that they're really missing. I was really surprised to see that he had been sacked after the game just because I thought he should have had enough credit in the bank with the ownership. That's as simple for me. And I think ownerships should be bigger than fans. Fans with dissenting voices.
Yeah, but then in saying that, Andrew, they are a fan-owned club. So you've got to kind of remember they do have a voice here and they do deserve to be listened to. So yeah, it maybe feels like toys at the pram and the kids are getting their way, but this is the direction the club chose to go in.
I think there's definitely something of merit in the point that you're making, Laura, which is just like Hearts might not finish third by sacking Nielsen and getting a new manager bounce with Stevie Naismith. It could be rubbish and they end up even further behind. But I think what Hearts fans will say is, but we weren't going to finish third under Nielsen anyway. Not with the way that the team's been playing, certainly over the last number of months, if not the whole season, that they wouldn't have had the chance. So why take the risk knowing that that's going to happen when you can take a punt and at least maybe freshen things up and give yourselves a chance with a run in ahead of a big derby game, which can be, you know, a real shot in the arm for Hearts. If they go and beat Hibs, that can be the turnaround and that can push them on to galvanising that tail end of the season. And the point you were making, Andrew, as well, I think, again, has a lot of merit on the other side, because you look at the injury problems that Hearts have had this season, you look at the players that have been mainstays for them over the last couple of years, and particularly last season when they were so good. Craig Gordon was out for the rest of the season now. He only played half a season. Craig Halkett's been out for the best part of, 14, 15 months now. Liam Boyce, Gary Mackay-Steven, even Cammy Devlin's been in and out the side of the season. Like, that's the spine of a team. And they're people who were such exceptional performers for Hearts last season. You cannot take that into consideration when seeing the difference between Hearts this season compared to last season, when you're missing that kind of experience and ability in your team.
So just quickly on Stephen Naismith, massive opportunity for him. You know, he's still part of the Scotland setup, Laura.
Yeah, look, it's a massive chance for him. He's so far, he coaches with the national team just now. And to be fair, he's doing well. So now he's taking on whatever he's learned from Steve Clarke, whatever he's learned from Robbie Nielsen, whatever he's learned from all his managers in the past. It's his chance now to go out and show it. And for someone of his age, this is his big moment.
Well, yeah, lots of eyes will be on their lunchtime game on Saturday. Bear in mind, Hibs have also lost their last four games as well. So it's going to be quite an interesting game to keep an eye on.
The dogs bark and the caravan passes. The caravan keeps moving. The caravan keeps going.
Rounded up the rest of the weekend then. We did mention it before that Celtic had beaten Rangers 3-2. Champions elect, let's face it, that's pretty much it, done and dusted. I think Ange Postecoglou's side can win the title on the King's coronation, which I'm sure Celtic fans will enjoy. According to Todd Cantwell, Finn, Celtic didn't win the game, Rangers lost the game. Explain.
I mean, I can't really explain that. I don't know what he's talking about. I think
footballers, eh?
I think I know what he's angling at. I think he felt that the result of the game was from mistakes that Rangers made, rather than it being a dominating Celtic performance or whatever. So I kind of get that. But at the end of the day, you can't say Celtic didn't win the game because they did.
There's no getting away from that.
It was, I think it was quite indicative of the two seasons that the club have had. And actually, I suppose, what you would now call the aberration of the season where Rangers won the title. This is really what we've seen for the last number of years, which is, I don't think there's a huge amount between the teams, but there's enough. And that's the difference between winning a title and not. And I thought so many of the different instances in this game were indicative of where the two teams are. So where Celtic are lethal between their front players and they will pounce on any mistake you make. Rangers are not. Rangers are lethargic. I don't think Celtic were particularly great. I didn't think there was a great amount of fluency in the way that they were playing. And I think a lot of that was down to the way that Rangers were set up and the way that they played. You know, Rangers would hassle them and put them under pressure, which was great because it forced Celtic into making mistakes. But then they did nothing win it. And I think there were so many occasions in the match. I think there was one early on where Ryan Kent, who I think if we're being fair, it wasn't so much a bad performance as a honking jobby of a performance from him.
And he normally plays very well in those games.
Well, but that's the thing. He hasn't done for a long time. I think he's a bit of a busted flush, especially when it comes to those games. There was a point where Celtic were terrified of facing Ryan Kent and they're not anymore. But I just think, again, that's indicative of the whole Rangers squad. This squad, we all know it, has run its cycle and it's time for a bit of a freshening up in the summer. I don't know if there's a huge amount that Rangers can hang their hat on ahead of the semi-final. I still think Celtic are the firm favourites for that and probably therefore for another treble. But yeah, the league's gone and there's a lot of work to be done for Rangers in the summer.
Moving on, Motherwell. Laura, they're on fire. 6 out of 7 undefeated for Stuart Kettlewell now. He's only lost to Rangers since he's been appointed.
Like, it's been incredible since he's came in. They've not only secured safety in the league, which was the main issue to start with, now they've got an outside chance of even making the top 6, which in itself sounds ridiculous after the kind of season they were having around kind of Christmas time. What Kettlewell has done, it's been great. Like, he's changed the shape slightly. He's went for kind of more 3-5-2. And one player that I think has really benefited from this is Max Johnson. He was out on loan the first half of the season. He's came back and he's really kind of fit into this side to have that freedom to run down the flank and not only set up goals, but also score them himself. He's one for the future. He's one of the big young talents coming through at Motherwell right now.
Yeah, he's well thought of. He's even been linked to recently promoted Burnley, so who will be playing in the English Premier League next season. So he's very well thought of, Johnston. Really exciting prospect. Speaking of the top 6, St Mirren should definitely be seeing themselves clinch that. Obviously, they beat Hearts 2-0 at Tynecastle, but it was only their third away win of the season. But it moves them 4 points clear in fifth. They face Rangers away and Kilmarnock at home in the final two games before the split.
And I think they'll do it as well. It's been an amazing season for St Mirren, really. If they finish top 6, and I think they will, it will guarantee their highest league finish since the 84-85 season. Just to put that into context, their top scorer that season was a young Frank McAvaney.
So that's how long ago.
How long ago it was. But I mean, we've talked about it before because obviously if your previous working relationship at Motherwell with Stephen Robinson, Laura, but the job he's done there is absolutely magnificent. And you can point to very obvious examples of it. I think the home win over Celtic was an incredible result considering the season that Celtic have had round about that. But he's done an amazing job. I know their away record isn't amazing, but it's because they've been so good at home and they've concentrated on trying to establish St Mirren Park as a fortress, and they've done really well there this season. It shows you what you can do if you get your home form sorted. You actually don't really need a particularly good away record. In saying that, I mean, a win at Tynecastle is a brilliant result. So it's been a fantastic season so far for St Mirren.
At the bottom, a massive win for Dundee United. They beat Hibs, who have been on a massive losing streak themselves. We don't see them getting rid of their manager. sorry, being too harsh. Or am I? The result moved them back within 2 points of Ross County. And the Dingwall side, they'd beaten St Johnstone the day before to open up a bit of a gap. So it was a must win as well for Dundee United for many reasons. But can someone tell me what's going on in the Championship?
That's a very good question. What is going on with Queen's Park right now, by the way?
Free fall.
Honestly.
Because I'm free, free falling.
It's only a few weeks ago we were talking about their chance to win in the league, never mind coming up. And was it now 3 defeats in the trot? They've conceded 7, they haven't scored any. it's not a good time to get stage fright, guys. Come on.
I blame Ross County for signing Simon Murray.
Off. I think we said at the time how massive that was going to be. More for Ross County than Queen's Park, but still. Look, in saying that, Partick Thistle, on the other hand, what a run they're going on.
Oh, my God.
They can actually win the league now.
You're joking about like the free-falling nature of Queen's Park. But it was only a couple of weeks ago as well that we had Ewan Booth Robertson on, who's a big Jags fan, and he was joking, I think, at the time, however optimistically it was, about, oh, you know, I'd rather go and see the team go and win the league. But now it's a pretty distinct possibility. I mean, their form's been excellent in recent weeks. This game as well, by the way, the atmosphere was absolutely sensational at this game.
It was awesome.
Like a proper, if we're talking about Glasgow derbies and good atmospheres, this was as good as anything across the city, across the weekend. It was absolutely amazing.
It was one of those where Queen's Park were just not even in it, really. But it was the second half, 4 goals in the second half for Partick Thistle. Chris Doolan's done an amazing job there. The other absolute mad thing is, I mean, what an opportunity for Dundee. And then they go and draw 0-0 with Arbroath, who are like trying to get out of the relegation fight. I mean, does nobody want to win this and get to the Premiership?
I was reading the lowest points total a title-winning team has had in the Championship is 65 points. That was St Johnstone in the 08-09 season. And with only 15 to play for, and it kind of being renowned as so tight, and teams look like they're going to go on a run and then they don't, I wonder if that record could be broken this season.
Elsewhere, Dunfermline could be promoted as League One champions on Tuesday. As you're listening to this on Thursday, they probably will already be. I feel like I'm on the channel Dave with these podcasts sometimes. But yeah, if Dunfermline beat Peterhead on Tuesday night and Falkirk drop points to Montrose, that will seal the title for the Pirates, the mighty All-Stars. But guys, do you want to talk about Stirling Albion?
Yes, please.
Why the hell not?
Excellent.
Big men are up from the back. El Mahani, right foot. Whips it. Oh, jeezy peeps, man.
The Beanos are on the brink of League Two glory themselves. And it could be their first ever title win in Scotland's fourth tier. They're sitting 9 points clear of Dumbarton, who they face on Tuesday night. A win there, coupled with a point at the weekend, would see Stirling Albion clinch the league trophy. So while I was on a flight to Madrid to meet the big man, Don Ancelotti, Lauren Finn caught up with Stirling Albion fan, Graham Ruthven of the Total Soccer Show.
Graham, it feels like a question of when rather than if now. Just how big is this league title for the club?
Oh, it's absolutely huge when you consider where Stirling Albion have been over the last few seasons. I think since the fan takeover, which must have been about maybe 12 or 13 years ago now, there has been a contraction of the club. So I always used to think of Stirling Albion's natural level as the third tier of Scottish football. Unfortunately, we then slipped down to the bottom tier, to the fourth tier, in the last 8 or 9 years. It's just been very difficult to get out of that division, and so this year has been slightly unexpected. We finished seventh last season. We were slightly more concerned with relegation and the trapdoor into the Lowland League than promotion last season, but since round about the autumn of this season, it's just been magnificent.
You're talking about last season. See, if you look at the past few years since you've been in League Two, the kind of places you finished has been like 5th, 7th, 6th, 3rd, 6th, 7th. Mm-hmm. What's different this year? Where has this title push come from?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, as with any successful team, good quality players has been very important. So I would highlight two players in particular, Dale Carrick. I know some people might look at Kane Hester or Tommy Goss as the best striker in League Two. I personally think it's Dale Carrick. He is a one-man attack. He presses, he holds up the ball. His first touch is excellent. He brings others into the game. He wins free kicks. And of course, he scores goals. He's got 24 goals this season, which is the most a player of ours has had for a long time. The second attacking player who made a big difference was Kai Fotheringham. He was on loan from Dundee United for the first half of the season. He registered, I think, 17 goal contributions. And he just gave us someone who can beat a man and produce something out of nothing. And you could see quite clearly that he was too good for this level. If anything, he performed slightly too high for us because Dundee United then snatched him back in the January transfer window, and replacing him hasn't been easy at all. But I think Darren Young has found a system, the manager's found a system that works for this group of players. We've been using a 4-4-2, which has got the best out of Carrick, because last season he was kind of playing out on the wing, which never made much sense to me. But he's used him in a front two with Robert Thomson, and we are an attacking team. I mean, we are the top goal scorers in the division. Weirdly, we have the best defence in the division as well, which is strange because I don't think we're particularly good defensively. I think we're quite vulnerable, and actually in most games the best form of defence for us is attack. But it feels like a team that doesn't really know how to protect leads and just goes out to score second and third goals and fourth goals, and we've even scored six goals in a game this season, funnily enough, against Dumbarton. So I would settle for that on Tuesday night to effectively clinch the title.
Just looking ahead to the inevitability of you being promoted this season, how do you think that kind of style might fare in a higher division? Do you think Darren Young might have to look at that kind of like almost Kevin Keegan-esque, you know, if the opposition score three, we'll score four kind of attitude? Yeah. I mean, it's really exciting for the fans, but is that something that you might have to adapt slightly in temper if you're heading up the division?
Yeah, you're tapping into my fears here, Finn, about next season already. So it wasn't until maybe 2 weeks ago we started to look ahead to next season and how that might go. And it's fair to say there is some concern among the Albion support. I always used to think that the gulf in Scottish football was between the second tier and the third tier. That's where the big jump up was. And actually, that's where Stirling Albion kind of found themselves before the fan takeover, was making that jump between the two divisions, between the old First Division and the Second Division, season after season. And we'd go back down, we'd go back up. But now, actually, I think the gulf is between the fourth tier and the third tier. And you look at the money that's been spent by Queen's Park. I mean, this is the context that you must apply to Stirling Albion's season this year. Each of the last three seasons, there's been a dominant team in this league that has spent a lot of money. So you had Queen's Park, you had Cove Rangers, and last season you had Celtic Hearts.
Yeah.
This season has been the first season where there's been a level of parity across the whole division. And so this has led to this sense among the Albion fans that actually we're maybe not that good. I mean, this team is not going to be spoken about in the same breadth as the Robert Snodgrass team that got promoted, or the Helicopter Saturday team where we got promoted up to the First Division on the final day of the season. This team is nowhere near as good as that side. And so we've started to sign up some of the key players. Dale Carrick has been signed up for next season. Blair Curry, who I think is one of the best goalkeepers in the league, he's been signed up for next season. A couple other players as well. But actually, I think Darren Young is going to have to do a very good job in recruitment to even keep us competitive next season. Because we look at teams like Clyde have been particularly bad this season, but Peterhead, I think, is round about the level we would place ourselves at. And they are struggling big time this year to stay in that division. So it is going to be a massive jump up for us, assuming that we get the job done and we end up with a trophy in our hands.
Just looking at a larger scale here, what are the club's ambitions here? Because obviously you're looking at, you're not too close to Glasgow, not too close to Edinburgh, but still in the heart of things. What's the club's ambitions to, is there scope to grow?
There certainly is scope to grow for Stirling Albion. That has always been the paradox of Stirling Albion as a club. As you mentioned, we're in a central position. I always think that should give us an advantage in recruitment. So a lot of the Angus clubs and even clubs like Stranraer down south and Annan Athletic will find it difficult to get players on loan. I think in lower level football, the loan market is crucial. I mentioned Kai Fotheringham there. I don't know if we're in this position if we don't have him for the first half of the season. So that certainly gives us an advantage, or it should give us an advantage. And obviously Stirling is a sizeable place in itself. Obviously you're battling against fans going to Celtic Rangers games and even up to St Johnstone games. I've got a few friends who are St Johnstone fans, or even to Edinburgh for Hibs and Hearts. But there certainly is scope for growth, and we have seen the crowds this season pretty much double in size. I mean, last season, obviously, I think there were still at times some COVID restrictions last season, maybe at the start of last season, but nonetheless, we were getting 450, 500, and this season we've breached 1,000 a couple times. The Dumbarton game at home a couple weeks ago was 1,500. It seemed like the stand itself was actually over capacity for that game. So these are good signs for the club. Also, we had at the start of the season a bit of a tussle between the executive board and the trust board. And being a fan-owned club, that mechanism is very important to the running of the club. Basically, the trust board recommended that the executive board make a change, and this, it actually got pretty nasty, and I think that was actually starting to affect some of the crowd numbers. That was all resolved around the autumn time, which coincided with this run of form that we're currently still on. So there's just a good feeling about the club right now. For the first time since the fan takeover, it feels like there is a bit of a fresh start, and that has manifested itself in better performances and results on the pitch.
You kind of mentioned the other kind of turning fortunes and form. Dumbarton started the season so strongly and then fell away. I think they've won like 3 games in 12 or something. We're still in Albion. The opposite. It was like since December, I think you've not lost a game. So something like that's a run of 15 games or something. Has this almost felt like two different seasons for you?
Yeah, it has been a weird season where we've been in this slow motion title race for a long time. So as you say, Dumbarton started very strongly. They started with 7 straight wins. Albion were a long, long way behind. And then we just built some real momentum over the autumn and into the winter. We were kind of pulling them back. By the time we got into the new year, we were pulling them back with a point here and there. And I was certain it was going to go down to the final day. And then Dumbarton have just completely collapsed these last few weeks. They've lost 4 of the last 5. And it's very quickly got to the point where we can effectively win it with a win over them on Tuesday night. And even if we don't get that win, to be honest, I don't want to jinx things, but our advantage is so great and their form is so poor that it would take a massive turnaround in fortunes for the title to end up anywhere but fourth bank. But yeah, I was prepared for it to go down to the final day. There's a bit of needle between the two teams, which is always good in a title race. I'm expecting more of that on Tuesday night. That actually comes from... this will be the third time that I've been to Dumbarton this season. I've yet to see a match played there because 2 matches have been postponed. Their pitch is an absolute tatty field. And so we have only played 1 match, and that was in the opening game of the season. So it's a long time since we've been to Dumbarton. The last time they came out very physical against us, it took us a little while to get up to the game, up to the fight. But I'm expecting the adrenaline to carry us through on Tuesday night, because it's been a long, long time since we've had a night like this.
Is their pitch such a mess? Because they're co-sharing with the Rangers B team, aren't they?
Yeah.
So it's basically never got a chance to reset.
Exactly. So because it's behind the rock as well, it doesn't get much sunlight. And I believe a lot of their fans on Pine Bravo were saying their groundsman lives in air, so actually can't get to the ground. Stirling Albion turned up to their stadium before the groundsman had been there on the day. And so that was why it was postponed 45 minutes before kickoff. I was there at the door, but I refrained from shouting abuse at any Dumbarton club official. And certainly not their groundsman. But if it happens on Tuesday night again, maybe I won't have that restraint.
I think there'll definitely be a case to have a go then. One little personal question I kind of wanted to ask you. I'm actually an avid follower of the photos of your scran that you post from the football whenever you go. But I need to ask you about the one from the weekend, an Indian garlic doner pie. Can you just talk us through that?
This sounds amazing.
So that was pie of the season so far. I'm not sure that will be bettered this year. It was absolutely phenomenal. So I should give a shout out to David Stoker, who some listeners might follow on Twitter. He was the kind of original piefluencer with his matchday pie reviews. But there's just something about a pie that's just perfect for the matchday experience. And I guess maybe from a slightly indulgent way, I wanted to document the games that I was going to this season on my social media. But, you know, your standard picture of the pitch from the stand is a little bit boring. So I thought I'll chronicle it through the different pies that I've had at grounds. And some of them have been excellent. You know, Forfar's always good for a bridie. Stirling Albion pies, I would contest, are as good as any in the country at the moment. Speciality pies this season we've had. Kung Po chicken, we have had the shredded chili chicken, we've had various kebab pies, chicken and ham pies, so they're always good. But yeah, there's just something about a pie that is quintessential, that is essential for the matchday experience for me.
I think so. I mean, this is maybe just me coming in with a bit of a kind of like football da opinion. Is there potentially too much option now when you go to these grounds of variations of pies and stuff? Are we losing, you know, that unbridled joy of just the Scotch pie, and is it time to get back to basics with things like that as well?
You sound like an Albion Rovers fan, because I went to Albion Rovers away this season and I asked them, what's your pie selection? They told me pie. There was one pie. It was a Scotch pie. It was just called pie. It wasn't even a Scotch pie. That was the only choice. So maybe Clifton Hill is the place for you, Finn. I kind of get what you're saying. I mean, Ryan Bailey, who I do the Total Soccer Show with, is a Wimbledon fan. And they have, at their games, they have trucks with all different sort of, you know, like street food. And he's told me they have like waffles and different sort of like Korean fried chicken and things like that. And look, I'm sure it's great, but for me, that is not part of the matchday experience. You know, give me a pie any day of the week over that.
That's it from us this week. My thanks, my many, many thanks to Laura and Finn for putting up with my shit for another week, and to Graham Ruffin for chatting to us about Stirling Albion. But most importantly, to you, the listener, we really, really appreciate you actually listening to this. So if you do like us, you can leave a review wherever you listen to your podcast. You could also drop us a tweet at TSFSpodcast. But yeah, it's that time again. Go and listen to something else. Bye.